Hair by Susan Knight. Chapter 1. Dan was 9 years old, far too old to suck his thumb, but somehow it just crept in by itself as he drowsily listened to the adult voices murmuring above him. His face was pressed on the sleeping mat, but one eye could still see past the blurred shape of his nose and its encircling fist. He could see stiff hairs of the mat standing like grass stalks, a crumb of bread among them like a pale, cratered boulder, and a wide-awake ant exploring it busily, making as much fuss as Aunt Etta at a funeral. Beyond the ant, the dirt floor sprouted a small, dark thicket of legs, 9 smooth stool legs and 6 hairy people legs, with lumpy toes like old tree roots. And the faces high above them were thrown into silhouette against the wall. Dan stared sleepily at these shadows, moving against the puddle of yellow light on the rough plaster. The mud walls still held some of the day's heat, but the evenings were growing chilly now. And soon the threads of stories old and new, false and true, would be unfolded with the blankets, shaken out and rewoven into the family memories. Last year, when friends and relatives came to talk away the long nights, Dan was allowed to stay up and listen, tucked up on the nearest lap until he had to go to bed. Aunt Etta's was the best. She was so soft and squashy and comfortable that she took longer than anyone else to complain of Dan's sharp young bones, so he got to stay up longer. But it would be different this year. The sad fact was, he was getting to be too big to curl up on laps, as if he were an orphan lamb. As Dan thought about this, he decided that perhaps a sleeping mat in a dark corner was even better. If he kept very quiet, people forgot about him and what he should and shouldn't hear. Or perhaps they thought he was sound asleep, and that's when the most interesting things were talked about, and Dan patched together the invisible pieces of his life. He snuggled deeper into his blanket and watched his family's shapes on the wall. The beaky nose with a curling moustache and beard below and fuzzy hair above was his father, Amiel. Dan thought his father looked very much like his own sheep. He was big and woolly and warm, and of course he smelled of sheep too. Dan shifted his gaze, feeling the lashes of his covered eye brush against the mat. The egg shape with the big ears, a head which looked like a water jar, thought Dan, that was Uncle Bookie. Uncle Bookie, a water jar. Yes, a water jar with a crack in it. And the big tent shape between the two men was Aunt Etta. And occasionally a nose poked out of the tent, first to the right, then to the left, as her shadow turned from one man to the other. Dan had nearly fallen asleep when a sudden rumble of laughter from Amiel flicked open his eyes. He pulled out his wet thumb and listened. "Now leave me alone, Etta." "Quiet, you'll wake the boy," hushed Aunt Etta. Dan instantly shut his eyes. "A man should marry again, and 2 years is long enough. Too long. There's Arthur and Helen's Anna needing a husband. A hard worker she is, and a good dowry goes with her. You with a boy to raise, and needing brothers and sisters." Dan held his breath as his father answered, laughing, "Her mother's a Greek, Etta. Greek by birth, Jew by faith. A Syrian ready to perish was my father. And what's that to do with Anna herself? Raised a good Jewish girl all those years." "Yes, all these very many years." The jar and the wool were jolting with laughter again. The tent tossed a little and sprouted flapping hands. "Cluck, cluck, 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 like a lot of hens, you men. Peck and scratch, to dismiss a woman for what none can change, her age and breeding. Peck and scratch. And I suppose you were both such good catches yourselves." The tent crumpled down between the water jug and the woolly head, which finally stopped rumbling. It's a proper wife you need, Amiel, and Anna has many good years in her yet. Not like me. I'll not be here forever. Now, come now, Etta. You're strong as a horse. No. What do you mean, Etta? Dan held his breath. Was Aunt Etta going to leave them? What would they do then? Amiel, what a stupid brother you are. You never see me except when I'm bending over your son or your food or your washing or your everlasting lambs. Aunt Etta's voice trembled. And alarmed, Dan quietly raised himself, unnoticed on one elbow, and looked directly at the three around the oil lamp. Uncle Bucky was scratching his beard unhappily. He didn't like weeping women. Dan's father was patting Aunt Etta's hand clumsily. What is it, Etta? He asked, with concern. Do I treat you as a servant instead of my sister? Aunt Etta shook her head and covered her eyes. You have not seen.
Seen? Seen what?
I can no longer straighten myself. I'm always bending. And it's getting worse.
Worse?
Even Uncle Bucky looked sober. Still unnoticed, Dan lay down quietly again, his eyes wide and his ears straining. For more than a year, I've told myself it's just stiffness, or cold, or overwork, but every month I'm a little more stooped, do what I will. Amiel chewed his beard and grunted, like mother. May she rest in peace. Yes, like mother. And her mother before her. She ended her days with her head almost on her knees. Aunt Etta's voice died away. Uncle Bucky's jaw dropped.
Horrible! It's in the family. Will I get it?
Amiel scowled at him. You fool, Bucky. You're my brother-in-law, not a blood relation. Aunt Etta sniffed angrily. It is only the women in our family who suffer this affliction. Nothing can be done. Mother tried many cures which only caused her pain. I blame Eve, of course, the mother of all living and the mother of all living women's woes. But the will of the Lord be done. Though why this should be his will, she broke off, and Dan knew she was glancing to his corner. He moved not a muscle, and she lowered her voice. You see why you must find a wife and a mother for the boy. In a few years, his Aunt Etta will be no use to anyone. The concerned voices sank to a drone, and Dan shrank deeper into his blanket, shivering a little. Remembering the old woman he often saw in the marketplace who was huddled right over and who always looked haunted and angry. She scared him. Was this how Aunt Etta would be? She was so big and fat and always so out of breath when she had to pick up things from the floor. If she was to be bent so sharply in half, surely she would be squashed. Would she run out of air and choke? Dan quickly took a very deep breath and reactively stretched his back as straight and far as it would go. The tide of sleep ebbed swiftly, leaving him uncomfortably high on a prickly bank of wakefulness. "Ah, oh, enough now," murmured Amiel, the boy staring. "We'll talk in the morning. This is not for his ears." The wavering golden light on the wall was snuffed into a wisp of oily smoke, and the three black shadows gulped by the greater darkness. Aunt Etta crept in beside Dan's thin body, turned over and sniffed quietly a few times. In the far corner, Uncle Bucky banged his elbow on the wall and muttered something sharp under his breath, and Dan heard his father's knees crack and a deep sigh, and he knew Amiel was praying. Yulwe took a deep breath and sighed before he began, as if he were first breathing in incense and then expelling all unworthy thoughts. Dan wondered if God actually read the words as Amiel was framing them in his head, like reading a book, or if perhaps he just heard them as though they were spoken aloud, as clearly as they were heard in the synagogue. He imagined the words floating up like wisps of smoke to heaven. Would they be swallowed up in the clouds? Dissolve if rained on? Dan saw interesting pictures of an unspoken prayer making its way to heaven. What happened if God was not pleased with it? Or if bits of it were good and bits of it were not? Did a displeasing prayer just come tumbling back to earth with a thud, land as a curse on someone, or just sizzle up in a clap of thunder? Perhaps that's what lightning was. There must be a lot of bad prayers around in the winter. His father always said cold weather made people selfish. Was his father praying right now about Aunt Etta's affliction? Surely that would be a good prayer, and fly to heaven true and straight. Dan thought of his own prayers for his mother. It was such a long time ago. He'd only been a little boy then. What had happened to those prayers on the way to heaven? Had his child's voice been too weak or feeble for them to get all the way there? Were his words too simple and lame, not strong and powerful enough to reach? Or had there been so many tears and fears in his head that God couldn't read the words at all? Even big, strong Amiel had been afraid and tearful then, and his prayers hadn't worked either. Many times when he'd stumbled over his reading at school, Dan had felt the crack of the rabbi's stick on his knuckles, and so he knew it was impossible to read through tears. And fear filled your head with a kind of fog where you couldn't see or think at all. Perhaps happy people had a better chance of having their prayers heard. But Amiel had told Dan he must call to God in times of trouble. Perhaps there were different ways of calling. There were so many things he did not know, which nobody told you about, which was why he was shy of asking, in case he was supposed to know already. His drifting thoughts were interrupted by another deep breath, which indicated that Amiel's prayer was finished. This time it was always a sharp intake of resolution, followed by a sigh of resignation, as he rolled from his knees into his blankets. Soon all was quiet. After a few false starts, Amiel's gentle snore began its nightly rhythm. Only Dan lay awake, his bony spine soaking up warmth from Aunt Etta's well-padded back, staring into the darkness and wondering about all he had heard and all he did not understand.